Kids, you are very welcome to stay there. Good morning. It's lovely to be with you. I think most of you know me. If you don't, my name is Jo. I've recently done the occasional preacher's course, which means that occasionally I can preach. It's lovely to be here. I'm also the vicar's wife, but I'm not on sabbatical. But Richard does say hello. He sends you his very good wishes. He'll be back in 3 weeks. And I did spend a lovely week with him in San Francisco, so I haven't missed out completely. So it's our last week this week of considering Moses. And if you have been attentive, you'll know that the title of this series has been Adventuring with God. So for us, it's the last week because next week, as Nico said, we're moving into Lent and our Lent series. But it's actually not the end of Moses' story that we're looking at today. So just before I even start, I'd like to encourage you, you might want to, after today, just read the rest of the story in Exodus to know what happens next, because this isn't the final chapter, but it's the final bit that we'll be looking at. Now, there's a lot to say in quite a short time, with it being the final one, so I've had to be a little bit selective. But I do think it's helpful. Something I've done, I've missed a few Sundays, because I was in San Francisco, is do listen on the website if you've missed any talks. I've found that really helpful, so that you kind of get the full picture. So I would encourage you to do that as we wrap up this series and think about, you know, perhaps what has God been teaching you through this series and perhaps teaching us as a church. But today we're looking at this particular bit that we've seen in the video, the manna and the quails and the water. So we'll think about that for a few minutes before wrapping up with just a few final thoughts about Moses that I have to share with you. So before I go any further, please do just pray with me. Dear God, we thank you for this amazing story of Moses. Much of it is probably quite familiar to us, but please help us to think about it in a new way and to perhaps take some new things from it, and help us think about what you're trying to teach us today from this story. Please be with me now as I speak. Amen. Right, I wonder if anyone here is a bit of a hoarder. Does your house or possibly your bedroom look a little bit like that? Because I think Jo in that puppet sketch probably had a lot of stuff in her bedroom. Does anyone want to admit that your house or your bedroom, is it full of stuff? Few brave people? Yeah, well, I'm going to let you into a little bit of a secret. I actually come from a family of hoarders. I have this genetic tendency. I do think it is a bit genetic. It's really hard to kind of throw stuff away, isn't it? It's great to just have stuff. And just over a year ago, I helped my dad move, and he'd lived in the same house with my mum and me and my brother growing up for 45 years. Now, I quickly came to the conclusion that my parents had never got rid of anything, and I mean anything. We made so many trips to the tip and to the charity shops, they actually knew us by name after a little while, and we spent weeks and weeks sorting out what should we keep, what should we give away, what was just rubbish, really, that it couldn't be used again. Isn't it? Because that's what happens when you just have so much stuff. Now, many of those things had been useful once, they had been needed once, and they'd broken. But I have to tell you another secret. I found quite a lot of things in unopened boxes, unopened packets, things that looked completely brand new, but I'd never seen my family use them. There was just so much stuff. And sorting out, when we were doing the moving, what we needed and what we didn't actually took ages because we were just a bit overwhelmed by stuff. Now, like I say, I'm a little bit like this. Most of it's in our garage, so you don't see it in our house. But Richard keeps telling me, don't turn into your parents. But it's easy, isn't it, in our world to accumulate lots and lots of stuff. So I wonder if that strikes a bit of a chord with you. Perhaps you find yourself just sorting through, what do I need? What should I keep? What don't I need? What do I want? Because we have a lot of things in our society, don't we? That game showed how many toys there are, fantastic toys that we can have and other lovely things that we can have. And it's very easy to get into thinking, oh, do you know, I really need that. That will really improve my life if I have that particular gadget, that particular object, that particular toy. But then sometimes, have you done that? You really, really wanted something and then you get it and it just sits on a shelf or in a cupboard or it gets used a couple of times and then it doesn't come out very much. Like Joe in the sketch, it's quite hard sometimes, isn't it, to distinguish what do we need and what is it that we want? And I wonder perhaps how many houses, could we just go back to the slide before, Craig? I wonder how many houses in Ashted maybe are a little bit like that one. Anyway, I'll come back to that in a moment. So thinking about today's Bible story, as we've seen on the clip, the Israelites are travelling through the desert. They've been freed from Egypt, which we've heard about a few weeks ago, and they've been taken through the Red Sea. And they're about 6 weeks into their journey, and guess what? They're grumbling. It's not the first time that they've grumbled. They're grumbling to Moses and Aaron. You can see them there looking a little bit fed up. And that's how chapter 16, which is the chapter today is based on, starts. They've already wished that they were back in Egypt. When they came to the Red Sea and they felt they were trapped, they said, oh, you know, it would have been better if we'd never left Egypt. And now they start doing it again because the difficulties they're facing in the desert have made them look back to their time in slavery slightly through rose-tinted spectacles. And they actually say at the beginning of chapter 16 that they wish they died back in Egypt rather than being freed. So they are not in a terribly good mood. They're a bit fed up because they're hungry. Now, as we know, again, as we saw from the game, food and water, we do need those, don't we? They are basic human needs. So what does God do? Because he's already looked after them as they've come out of Egypt. He's already brought them through the Red Sea. He's kept them safe from the Egyptians. God does something really quickly. So quickly that Moses actually doesn't even have to ask him. God just responds. God says that he'll provide bread and also meat in the form of quails and water, as we saw, for the people to gather. So his provision is pretty miraculous and it's pretty immediate. And you can see there what the manna might have looked like, kind of very soft, kind of white, a bit like bread. Once again, God is faithful. And as was mentioned in a sermon a couple of weeks ago, the whole story of Exodus is really about God revealing his faithfulness. So this story, the manna and the quails and the water, is probably quite familiar to a lot of us. It's a story that we tend to hear about, isn't it? God sending the manna. But I'd like to just very briefly, as I begin to finish, think about a few things that we can take from it today. Firstly, I think it's God showing the Israelites and actually reminding them and also us who God is and what he does. And this actually, if you go through the story of Moses, this happens again and again, who God is and what he does. So God's already told the people through his words and actions that he's a judge. He's judged Pharaoh. He's a protector. He's protected the Israelites. He's delivered them. He's redeemed them. He's saved them, all of those words, slightly similar meanings, and he's the Lord. He is the one in control. In addition to all of those things, God's also now saying, actually, I'm the provider. I will provide for you. He's heard their complaining, and he provides for their immediate needs. And it says, if you read the chapter, which might be helpful for you to do, read chapter 16, it says in there, you know, I'm sending this manna, these quails, this water, because then you will know that it was the Lord who brought you out of Egypt. The people are complaining against Moses and Aaron, because it's easier, isn't it, a bit, to kind of grumble against people. Although we can grumble against God, but people are a slightly easier target sometimes. But God's saying, actually, I'm the one who's in charge here. I'm the one who will provide and look. Here is what you need. So again, he's reminding the people, he's displaying to them who he is and that he's keeping his promises to look after them. But there is, it's a little bit more complex than that. Again, if you read the story, because there are some instructions. Again, it's come out in the story so far. God says, I'm all of these things. But actually, if you want to be part of that, then there's some things I'm going to ask you to do. So there are some instructions. People were told only to gather as much as they needed. And it was amazing because everyone got, however big or small their family was, they got the right amount. Now, some people, probably quite understandably, tried to gather more manna so that they had a bit of a hoard, bit like my house, but that didn't work. If they gathered more than they needed and they kept it till the next day, it actually went mouldy, so it was no use. Also, before the Sabbath, God said, because I want you to rest on the Sabbath, the day before the Sabbath, gather a double portion, twice as much, and that will keep. Again, some people kind of ignored that, and they tried to gather on the Sabbath. Guess what? There was nothing there on the Sabbath. And I think that's something that God is reminding us, that to be participants in his plan and provision, we are asked to follow what he says. When the Israelites ignored God's instructions, it was pretty futile. They didn't actually gain anything from it. And this provision went on for 40 years. That's something I learned. I thought it was just for a few weeks. I don't know why I thought that, but I did. But it says at the end of chapter 16 that God sent manna and quails for 40 years until they reached the promised land. So God provided for their needs. Not necessarily for their wants, but for their needs for 40 years. So, what does this mean for us today? Do we trust God to provide our needs? In the desert, the Israelites had to rely on God every day because they had to collect fresh manna every day, and they got exactly the amount that they needed. I think that's quite hard for us, isn't it? Because we tend to surround ourselves with the security of stuff. I know that I do that. And maybe think about, do we get what we want? And I think perhaps that's something that God is just wanting us to think about. What do we need and what do we want? And perhaps not to be too upset if we don't always get what we want. Because we're often told in the Bible that God will provide, not to worry about our security. Our world tends to tell us that our security is in money and possessions. That's a very kind of worldview, which is very understandable. But God tells us, and I think this story reminds us, that actually as Christians, our ultimate security should be in him. Now, of course, we do have basic needs, don't we? That game showed us that. We do need certain things to survive. We do need a certain amount of money in our world to survive. And of course, if we don't have that, it can lead to anxiety and other problems. So I'm not at all saying that we don't need anything. But I think it's about where is our security? Where do we ultimately place our trust? I also think God's not saying it's wrong to have good things. It's not wrong for Joe to have that lovely toy, but maybe God isn't so happy if that's what we're consumed by, is just getting more and more stuff, and that's our security, and that it clutters up our life. Because I think that perhaps detracts from our relationship with God. So perhaps sometimes it's helpful to think about our attitude. You know, sometimes we can grumble, like the Israelites, that God hasn't given us what we want, and maybe fail to recognise that actually he has given us what we need. I think it's quite good just to perhaps review that in our lives and what our attitude is towards what we want and what we need. Just other things, again, I'm going to finish in about 30 seconds, but just very briefly things to think about. You know, do we think about, for example, the earth's resources when we buy lots of stuff? Do we think about others that perhaps have very little, where maybe we can share a little bit with them? So just a few thoughts on today's passage. As we finish this the series on Moses, I tried to think sort of what were the key things that I've taken from this series. So just to close, I think that the series of Moses, for me, it might be different for you, but just four things to very quickly share with you. For me, it's been about recognizing again who God is, what he has done and actually what he can do, trusting in him that he will protect and provide. That we look forward. The Israelites kept wishing that they were back in Egypt when actually that hadn't been good for them. But, you know, do we look forward resting on God's promises? And what's our part in the story? Do we go along with God's plan? There will be challenges. It says in the song we sang, isn't it? No matter what I'm going to face tomorrow. But I hope that we can get reassurance that God is with us in those. Amen.